Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we have moved to a new time. As you have probably noticed, we are no longer in the mornings. I'm sorry to say that Talk of the Nation is no longer on the air. I was a fan of that program. We do a similar kind of subject matter on our program, so we are happy to move into this time slot. All things political will continue. It was a regular mainstay of our morning program. It will continue each Monday from 1 until 3. We'll be talking about big news stories of the day, the first hour of the show, and cultural issues and political issues, and speak with authors and historians the second hour of our program. So it's the same show, essentially, just a new time, and we hope that you will continue to listen to us and tune us in Monday through Thursday from 1 to 3 in the afternoon. And we're delighted to have Clarence Page as our first guest during this new time slot. He, of course, is syndicated columnist, member of the Chicago Editorial Board, winner of the Pulitzer Prize for Commentary, and frequent commentator on National Public Radio and cable TV news shows. He has written about a number of issues recently. We'll probably start with the president's journey to Africa and his moving visit to Robben Island, where Nelson Mandela spent 18 years confined to a tiny cell. Clarence has written about Paula Deen. How's this for an interesting thing for him to have said? I think Paula Deen should be thanked, not just spanked, by those who believe, as I do, in the value of candid racial dialogue. We'll talk about the future of voting rights in this country after the Supreme Court decision, and we'll look at their other major decisions of last week, and a little bit about the strategy of the Republicans portraying Hillary Clinton as old. Mitch McConnell at a conservative conference calling the 2016 Democratic presidential field the Golden Girls. Here's our phone number, how you can reach our conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. So that's how you reach us. Clarence Page, hello. Thank you very much for being with us, sir.
Thank you, Kathleen. Glad to be here in this new time slot.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. The sun is in a different location. I didn't know what to do about lunch.
I know your whole body clock is off, right?
I know it is. I'll get lunch after the show, I reckon. Let's start with the president's journey to Africa. This must have been a very moving experience for him, and I'm sure it has been for everybody, particularly that Robben Island visit where Nelson Mandela spent so many years, and just the enormity of Nelson Mandela and who he was and who this president is to many of us as well. There's a lot of history here, isn't there?
Yes, there is. There's significance on a number of different levels. And I have to say, on a personal note, I covered South Africa. I was there at the time of the Soweto uprising in 1976 under apartheid. As an African-American journalist, it is a story in itself, working in apartheid South Africa. And then I returned 26 years later to free South Africa, the post-Mandela presidency. And it is remarkable on a number of levels here because for one thing, there's the sacrifice. You mentioned the years he spent on Robben Island. He was actually over 20 years total incarceration before he was released in 1989, and the last days of apartheid broke down. And he, I think partly because of his legal background, had and has a great respect for the law. And that's what prevented South Africa from breaking open into the kind of bloodbath many people feared. Quite the opposite. It's been a model on so many levels. And I think that's something that certainly impresses Barack Obama. He was, as he said there in South Africa, his first political involvement was as a protester. Yes. Against apartheid. He did get to meet Mandela when the man was in better health, fortunately. And this time he met with Mandela's family because Nelson Mandela was doing so poorly that the president would rather not visit him in that state. But this is something that was very important for sending signals, not just across South Africa, but across all of Africa, because for one thing, we all wonder what the post-Mandela days are going to look like. Will that Mandela magic still take hold and stay in effect? You know, so many other African countries will have what they call one person, one vote, one time. And that was what was feared in South Africa. It didn't happen. And he's become a model for a lot of other African nations.
Let's talk about what the future of America in the post-Supreme Court decision last week on voting rights may look like. The Times, I'm sure you probably saw that, I think it was yesterday, saying that they wanted Republican lawmakers to join Democrats in restoring fairness to the election system. Discrimination at the ballot box continues and is growing. Let's look at what's happened immediately after that decision, Clarence, and whether or not you see any kind of Republican-Democratic coalition to make sure that we have fair voting in this country.
Yeah, I'm working on a column on that now.
Are you?
In fact, there's a lot of historical deja vu, first of all, we got to look at here. And I think that, why do we have a Voting Rights Act? Because ever since Reconstruction ended, you saw a suppression of the black vote, particularly in the nine states specifically named there in Section 4 and 5 of the Voting Rights Act. That was because the passing of the 15th Amendment wasn't enough. Black voter participation was something like 6 or 7%. There in the South when the Voting Rights Act was passed in 1965. You've got participation in Mississippi, for example, a higher black turnout than white turnout in recent elections. And so Justice Roberts says, well, there's no the problem is cured. There's no need to have this anymore. Or actually, that's not what he really said. The late night comedians put it that way. But what he actually said was they haven't updated that list of states in 30 years, I believe. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And that Congress needs to update it. So let's scrap it. That's what the court said, essentially. And updating is fine. But, the fact is, the last time Congress voted a few years ago, they had a virtually unanimous vote in favor of reconstituting the bill as is, reconstituting the act. And also, the Justice Department has been working right along. They can rattle off the statistics of all the complaints they have had to review and how many have been rejected, including from the county in Alabama that brought this case before the Supreme Court. The problem is not over. And in fact, right after the Supreme Court ruling today, I understand, in Texas, they're arguing over a voter ID law that is obviously calculated to, once again, suppress black and Hispanic voters and others who might vote Democrat. And so, this problem goes on. Now, you raise a very good point. What are the chances of an update getting through Congress, which is the way democracy is supposed to work? Well, as we've seen in Washington, democracy hasn't worked very well on Capitol Hill, especially in the House. You can see they couldn't even get a farm bill passed recently, and that used to be routine. I don't know if anybody really expects Congress to be fair about this, but under pressure, we will see.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it unusual, Clarence, that you had these two major decisions a day apart, and one seemed to move in the direction of granting civil rights in a major way to gay and lesbian people in this country, and this decision the day before does quite the opposite? What does that say about the court, the makeup of the court, or the future of decisions?
Yeah, well, I think the court is trying to be a conservative court in the classic sense, which means, do no harm and try not to make any radical actions. Try to stick with the letter of the law and the Constitution. However, also keep an ear out for changing times. And we can certainly see attitudes have changed radically in this country, swinging in favor of same-sex marriage rights. The only real argument that's come out against it and keeps get repeating is that it's going to somehow damage or destroy traditional marriage. Kathleen, I'm happy to say my wife and I just celebrated our 26th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Amidst rising same-sex marriage in the country, and our marriage hasn't been damaged at all. And I think the very fact that argument has fell apart, as well as changing generations and all that, has caused a rapid swing just over the last 5 years, since the proposition of or the passing of Proposition 8 out in California. So you can see that in that sense, the court didn't want to, though, just sweepingly overturn all the state laws that have anything to do with marriage. That's what they did with Roe versus Wade in establishing abortion rights across the country, and you saw the backlash that we're still living with today. So I think that's really the real message from this court.
Let's talk a little more about racial dialogue. Some people will find your comment interesting in one of your columns. Paula Deen, you wrote about her. I think Paula Deen should be thanked, not just spanked, by those who believe, as I do, in the value of candid racial dialogue. And you also write, I think, in the same column, which I was amazed to learn, your white dormitory friends in college who thought they were oh so clever every time the lights went out and they said, "Smile, Clarence, so we can see you."
Right. And, you know, I didn't have space to go into it, but I was reading a profile of Clarence Thomas back when he was going through confirmation, and they mentioned his still grumbling over that very same joke being thrown at him word for word when he was at Holy Cross in the dormitory. And as I said in my column, I always wonder, why do white guys think they're the first person to think
right.
of that, you know?
Right.
And it's, I put that in there because it's what I call the kind of behavior that you apologize for at your class reunion. We just had our 40th class reunion here a year or two ago. And after two generations, people come to you after a little time at cocktail hour and all and tell you about some affront to you that they did in study hall way back in 1960-something, and which you've completely forgotten. But it's been bugging them ever since. And, I mean, this is the kind of thing that that one would have done back in their college days, but you've outgrown it. Well, Paula Deen and I are the same age, you know, and she apparently never outgrew it. She never had enough contact with black folks in that sense, even though she has said in past interviews that she believes things are better in the South than the North because whites and blacks live so close together. And she's had lots of black servants and black employees.
Right.
And so that's why I thank her for her candor, because, you know, Kathleen, I've been calling for racial dialogue since the mid-90s when I did a book on race. And I find, as my friend Michelle Norris at NPR says, the people who really need to have dialogue the most are the last ones to show up. And I put Paula Deen in that category. Why? Because she's just so convinced that she knows all she needs to know about black folks.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously she didn't.
Are you following the Trayvon Martin case closely?
Well, yeah, I've been keeping an eye on it. I find it thoroughly depressing, as I did with the O.J. Simpson trial.
How so?
Well, I just don't. Well, you know, the O.J. Simpson trial was one where you had very few witnesses and evidence that was argued over for weeks. And I see the same kind of thing happening here. You only got two real witnesses to the killing, and one of them is dead. And it's just it's the kind of thing that you got this meta trial, as I called it in the O.J. case, and here again, that's the trial that's going on outside the courtroom, out here in the media, across the country, in which it becomes a Rorschach test for people's attitudes. And they're on the one side, those who see police profiling, not police profiling, but neighborhood volunteer profiling at work, and the other side that sees this strapping black youth who may well have attacked this man, and so the man may have been wrong to have followed him, but he shouldn't be punished for that. It was self-defense, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's why I find it depressing. I'm not one of those who has already made up my mind as to who's guilty or innocent here.
Do you know what's happened to those stand your ground pieces of legislation that we have one in Wisconsin, too, that
right.
was voted on, I don't know, time goes so fast, maybe a couple of years now. Is there still a movement to make sure that other states have similar legislation, Clarence?
Well, I remember that after the Trayvon Martin case broke, there was you could say that there was a national reevaluation going on as far as people's attitudes go, because these laws have been on the books for years without making big headlines. But after the Trayvon case, we started hearing about other bizarre anecdotes or cases. I know another man in Florida who had a run-in with some youths in a park. And exchange of words, and he got mad, went home, got his gun, came back, shot one of the kids, and pleaded not guilty under the Stand Your Ground law. That is not a Stand Your Ground scenario, mm-hmm. and yet he was, I don't know how that case was finally resolved. He was charged anyway, and I think that's the kind of case that people are talking about nationally. And I think, as far as, you know, whether Florida has changed their law or not, I really can't say.
Clarence Page is our guest for All Things Political. We have moved to a new time slot, 1 to 3, Monday through Thursday, and we will continue All Things Political each Monday at 1 o'clock. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Those are always, you can leave messages for us, and we have other things to discuss as well. The Republican strategy, at least for now, it's pretty far away, the 2016 presidential race, but they tend to be about four-year-long races these days. Republicans evidently devising a strategy to say that both Hillary Clinton and the Vice President, Joe Biden, are too old. We'll talk about that with Clarence Page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And coming up today at 4 o'clock, our new show, Central Time, hosts Veronica Rickard and Rob Ferret. We'll talk about the news of the day, the joys and perils of being an only child, and some of the new additions to the English language. Phone calls now. Clarence Page is our guest for All Things Political during our new time slot. He is op-ed columnist for Tribune Media Services, member of the editorial board for the Chicago Tribune, and a commentator heard and seen frequently on television. Gene in Wauwatosa is our first caller. Hi, Gene.
Hi, welcome to 1 o'clock.
Thanks, Gene.
Gonna miss Talk of the Nation, I have to say.
I am, too.
Yeah. A couple points, I'm not sure which to go with, but mostly, I guess, let's go with local. The Obama's speech on energy last week I thought was interesting. I did watch it online, and I just, with Gasland 2 coming out, unfortunately, just through HBO now, I think they'd get more notice if it were more than just HBO, but I just wonder, like, there's no EPA involvement on this at all, and effectively, like, I think the Republicans have succeeded in diminishing that agency, if not getting rid of it altogether. I mean, the people in Pennsylvania, I think they should be, they must be really concerned. I mean, I'm concerned about the just the devastation in Wisconsin for the tar sands that they're demolishing the beauty of our state for that. And I just think it's almost as if, what can anybody do? It's been decided way back when Cheney was able to get those chemicals classified.
Clarence.
Well, one thing that strikes me about Obama's message last week was that we're still arguing about whether or not climate change is happening or whether or not humans have anything to do with it. And he, using very forceful language, said, "Don't be a nincompoop." You know, don't be a full mooner, as my old colleague Jack German used to say. He really kind of drew a line, saying that only fanatics would deny it. And look at the headlines today, Kathleen, with that terrible tragedy out in Arizona.
Oh,
where,
I know.
What is it, 18 young men, firefighters killed out there, and these, and all across the Southwest, massive heat waves, et cetera. And I know we shouldn't make the mistake of confusing weather with climate. That's one thing that happens every time we have a big snowstorm. Certain conservatives on Capitol Hill say, there you see, Al Gore was wrong. Ha, ha, ha. It's still snowing like crazy. You know, climate change means you have weather extremes in both directions. And I don't know of anybody sane or authoritative who denies that climate change is happening. The argument is over whether or not humans have something to do with it. And Barack Obama was very forceful in his argument last week, saying that we need to do something now to try to reduce the pollutions. Now, what that has to do with the coal industry is a good political debate, and I think we're having it. But he doesn't want to shut the coal mines down. He doesn't want to shut down the industry. But we need to have an honest debate about about what regulations do need to be passed. And also, it's not true that China and India aren't doing anything. They are. China may just get ahead of us here insofar as the sort of climate change reduction methods that they are putting billions of dollars into.
What is it about this issue, Clarence? Does it require a fundamental change in what we buy and the way we live that makes it so hard for us to take substantive action, which scientists all over the world are saying is necessary?
Well, what strikes me is how in this age, this polarized age, everything gets politicized, and that includes issues like climate change. Ever since Al Gore came out with his book in the early 90s. This has been something that the right has used to beat up the left over. And these very unscientific debates have gone on in the media that cause people to harden their positions. I have not been one who was that focused on these environmental issues. But one time I did a column about climate change, and I got a deluge of emails calling me a communist, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh my goodness.
For even giving credibility to it. Yeah, you know, that level of anger told me these folks don't know what they're talking about. They're angry about something else, you know, and that's really what has happened, that you have folks who view this as part of the fight against world communism or terrorism or something, if you happen to believe in windmill energy.
Right.
And so I think that's really kind of what's happened. But at the same time, I'm noticing, though, just like with other issues we've seen, we're talking about same-sex marriage a few minutes ago, you know, certainly there was hardly any debate more heated than that one. And yet, look at the changes in attitudes that have just happened. I still give the American people a lot of credit for good judgment, and I think we're going to see some action here. How soon is the question?
I was interested. I read somewhere over the weekend the press response to the Supreme Court decision and how gay marriage had been covered by pro-gay marriage, anti-gay marriage for a long, long time in this country. And all of a sudden, the coverage changed, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did. And I think what made a difference was real life cases. Now, I can't recall her name, but the woman who brought the case that got to the Supreme Court.
Edith Windsor.
Dear Edith, yes, indeed. Yeah. I know people were saying last week she joins the annals of civil rights heroes because she was denied benefits because she was not married to her partner. She was married, but under federal law, federal government didn't recognize it. That's just clear discrimination. And here is a couple of people. You just have to love these two women. And there was none of the, you know, for years, the anti-gay rights folks would play these documentary movies of the gay pride parade out in San Francisco. So you see these outlandish folks in leather, et cetera, having a grand time out there in this parade, and would say, "There, do you want that person teaching your kids and et cetera, et cetera?" So the public's perceptions have changed now, and more people just know somebody personally who is involved in a committed same-sex relationship. One of my dormitory buddies in college comes to mind who, after Stonewall, he came out of the closet. None of us knew through 4 years of college that he was gay, but after Stonewall in 69, like so many others did, he came out of the closet. And he and his partner have been together ever since. And I tell you, he has had a relationship that has lasted much longer than the marriages of any of the rest of us in that dormitory.
Yeah.
Some of us have been through two or three marriages over those years. And now he was so happy when that decision came down from the Supreme Court, because he and his partner can get married now and have it recognized. So that's the kind of story that has softened people's hearts.
Clarence Page, our guest for All Things Political at our noon time slot, 1 to 3. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Or you can always send an email, too. That's okay, talk@wpr.org. Ray in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Clarence. I really enjoyed you on the McLaughlin Group. Missed you from
Thank
there.
Thank you.
But
I still come back every so often when they invite me.
Great. I hope they do that more often. I want to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court decisions last week and of course, we were all happy the day gay people won their rights, but I was kind of saddened by, in all their celebration, they didn't have a word to say about the backward step that had been taken the day before for minorities and voting rights. And that kind of struck me as odd, because they really had the soapbox on that day, and they were all over the news, and I would have just loved to hear one of them while celebrating say, and we're going to go back out in the streets and march with our minority brothers and sisters to make sure the Voting Rights Act is reinstated fully, and especially in states like Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin needs to be added to that list. But could I also mention Mr. Obama's visit to Africa?
Go ahead, Ray.
And Robben Island. When they mentioned that, it just struck me, we have Guantanamo Bay where there are political prisoners starving themselves to death as we speak. And does anybody see an ironic thing and the president going there and not having anything to say about Guantanamo Bay while he was there?
I know he met some protests in Africa. Were any of those protests centered on Guantanamo? Do you know, Clarence?
I don't know specifically Guantanamo. I know there were protests there in regard to a number of other countries, Ivory Coast and others, and U.S. policy in regard to those countries, and U.S. policy about drones in Sudan and other places like that. He raises, first of all, a good point there with Guantanamo. President Obama is as frustrated as everybody else over Guantanamo because it was Congress that blocked him there, but now he's recommitted himself to closing it down. I think he's got to have his feet held to the fire on that, since he hasn't backed down on his promises. The other issue that the caller raised, you know, about gay rights movement and the conventional racial civil rights movement working together, you know, that's something that's been talked about over the years. And you've had individuals, like I can think of Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and others, numerous others, individuals who have worked together and marched together and all. But, you know, I mentioned earlier about Paula Deen being one of those folks who thought she knew all she needed to know about black folks and race relations, and she was wrong. You know, the same kind of thing happened in a different way with Prop 8 out in California. You remember that proposition to overturn same-sex marriage in that state occurred. The vote was the same day as Barack Obama's first election in 2008. And Barack Obama handily carried California, but Prop 8 passed, revoking same-sex marriage, largely because of a big turnout by black and Hispanic church-going folks, conservative, who had been pitched to very heavily by the folks who were opposed to same-sex marriage. And there was a lot of bitter feeling by gay rights activists, for example, who felt betrayed because they presumed that Barack Obama supporters were going to support them. And I talked to a number of them, and I said, you know, you've always got to knock on doors and ask for people's votes in politics and say, yeah, well, we realize that now, and we're going to do it right next time. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that has happened in the past. I think on both sides, people have presumed too much of each other. When I say both sides, I mean black activists, Hispanic community activists, gay rights activists. I can presume too much of folks in other communities and just presume support that really has to be requested.
So what happens now to issues that are of some concern to those who want to expand voting rights and not make it difficult to vote? Voter ID, same-day registration, cutting the number of early voting days. What outlets are there for people who are concerned about making sure that those are not implemented? Do they go to the Supreme Court in some way, Clarence?
Well, as we've seen, the Supreme Court has sent it over to Congress. That's essentially what they did. And, you know, this is the way democracy is supposed to work, that the voters are supposed to decide. But the reason why you had sections 4 and 5 in the first place was because democracy was so often thwarted in terms of blacks in the South. And so now I tell you, though, you know, in the real world, you know, I mentioned a moment ago that in Mississippi, you've had a higher black turnout than right. white turnout. That is what makes the difference with politicians getting out that vote. And, you know, a big reason for that high turnout, and also in states like Florida, for example, in this last election, was that African Americans were angry because they saw what looked like voter suppression methods being used, you know, cutting the early voting hours, voter ID laws, et cetera, and just simply got angry. I remember talking with a couple of African-American voters who felt disenchanted with Obama since 2008, but they were so angry at Republicans for allegedly trying to suppress their vote. They said, I'm going to get out to that polling place if I have to be carried over there. And so you had a record turnout of African-Americans, and for the first time on record, more a higher black turnout than white turnout in November. So I think that people are obviously angry, agitated, and they're going to, I believe, work through the conventional political methods at the ballot box and otherwise to try to either get this reverse, get it reestablished, or nationwide. Use Section 2, which is the right that we all have to file suit against voting procedures that look bad. And the only thing is that you have to go through the courts, meaning it can take you a couple of years before your suit gets to court. By then, the election can be held, and the folks who benefit from it are in office. That's why Section 5 was so important, why mm-hmm. it had teeth.
Thanks, Ray, for the call. Tom in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Clarence. I think, you know, that nothing happens these days at the U.S. Supreme Court by accident. And, you know, what happens is in concert with the rest of the Republican right-wing movement. And so to restrict, you know, to undercut voting rights, especially in the way that is being attempted nationally, to try and impact minority voters, was very conscious. Allowing rights under federal law for gay folks with regard to marriage wasn't a great leap. It's a simple equal protection case, and it doesn't really, I mean, it's been described as this grand movement, but frankly, it only applies to places, to states where people already have, gay people have the right to marriage already, and just says that they cannot be discriminated against with regard to federal benefits in those states. It does right. not grant any right to marry or anything else in any other state, and it really needs to be understood as restricted in that way. Nonetheless, even so, I saw it as a very simple equal protection case, but beyond that, mm-hmm. one has to understand that gayness, you know, the homosexuality seems to cut across all lines these days, even though a lot of the Republicans still seem to be consciously in the closet. Whereas, you know, restricting minority votes is a direct assault on Democrats and liberals who tend to vote, you know, people who tend to vote Democratic.
All right, let's get a response. Clarence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he's right about that. And I thought that the equal protection argument was indeed so obvious that I couldn't imagine the court not agreeing with it. And indeed they did. And they did also restrict it, as the caller said, to the federal law and what that applies to. What is still a big question now, though, is what happens if you get married in one state and move to another? Do you keep your federal benefits? Now, President Obama and others in government have said that they're going to make sure through executive order or through legislation that that is the case. But there's something like 150 laws, federal laws, that mention marriage. And it's remarkable how much the federal government has had a de facto definition of marriage in the past, and why this case was really necessary.
Hmm. Well, are you a believer? We were talking about different philosophies of change, some arguing that as our caller just did, that it was time for the Supreme Court to rule gay marriage constitutional. Others saying this needs to happen incrementally or there will be a huge backlash, just like the civil rights movement rights had to happen incrementally. Do you adhere to one or the other of the philosophies?
Well, I certainly saw, first of all, I see merit in both cases. There's no question that, as I mentioned, when Roe versus Wade was decided, that created a backlash that in many ways led to Ronald Reagan's election and to the rise of the Christian Coalition and the rest of the religious right, and the constant battles that we have even today over abortion in the states and how to restrict, et cetera. The court is wise to want to avoid that around the same-sex marriage issue, and that's what they did. Because let's face it, it's a big difference between having same-sex marriage in Massachusetts and having it in Alabama. Do you want to force Alabama to have it? At the same time, you don't want to deny people their rights. So this was one of those attempts to strike a middle ground and, as you say, have some incremental progress as people let this sort of social change sink in. This is the sort of thing that the court is always dealing with, and they have a way of they have a way of still being very unpredictable. Look at the Obamacare decision last year. Right,
you're right. Clarence Page is our guest this hour for All Things Political. You may have noticed that we've moved times. Our show is now on the Kathleen Dunn Show. That is from 1 until 3 in the afternoon. We're just starting this today, but we will continue All Things Political. It will be Mondays at 1 o'clock, so it'll take a little bit of getting used to. Talk of the Nation is no longer being produced, and so we asked for our show to be moved because we do a similar kind of subject matter, and we prize your call. So that's why we're here. And I hope those of you who have been listening have followed us. Obviously, you have, and you'll invite others to move to this time period. Clarence is a regular guest of ours on All Things Political. He's a syndicated columnist, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board, author of Page's Page blog at Tribune website, and you see him frequently doing political analysis on television. I'm Kathleen Dunn. 800-486-8655 is our number, and a couple lines are open for you right now. You can always use our email, talk@wpr.org, or Facebook, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program after 2 o'clock, you may be aware that today marks the 150th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg. It was a 3-day battle. It was very bloody, and it changed the course of the Civil War. We will have two guests with us talking about Gettysburg, hour two of our show. Clarence Page is here now, 800-486-8655. The number, Nate in Milwaukee, is next. Hi, Nate.
Hey, thanks for having me. I think somebody might have beaten me a little bit to the punch on the global warming issue before, but I feel like it's a good thing Obama's doing what he did, and the only reason he has to right now is because the Congress has refused to take action, and I think there might be some groups out there who, rather than paying to change their ways for the better, would rather fund the campaigns of people stuck in the Cold War. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the way capitalism works, and yet the global warming situation seems to be happening this way, is that people are not paying the financial impact in terms of flooding damage and a whole bunch of other things when it relates to the consequences of their actions.
Clarence.
Yeah, I think certainly... people who are touched by this have some stronger reactions, but a lot of it depends on how they are touched. There are folks on the East and West Coast, for example, who now know that they are in flood zones that as tide levels rise, and they are rising, are getting flooded more often now, and that their houses are on the brink of going into the ocean. And then you've got, like I mentioned, the heat waves out in the Southwest and the rampant fires going on. Look at Texas there. While a few years ago, while Rick Perry, the governor, was campaigning for president and talking about how we don't need Washington – he was turned around and asked for Washington aid to help with the fires that they were having across the state. You know, but the question is, how do you interpret it? Do you say that this is happening because of nature or because of what humans are doing to the environment? Like in Oklahoma or West Virginia, these oil and coal and gas states where they see their daily bread and butter coming from those industries, they tend to be more opposed to environmental protection efforts. Those who come from other areas, look at the whole question about the pipeline coming down from Canada. You've got folks on both sides here. Labor folks, union folks want that pipeline built because there's jobs, and then environmental folks don't want it built because it's going to ruin some beautiful natural areas. And so this is why, you know, it's not so easy. The old question about politics, where's mine? People look at the environment and they give different answers to that question, where's mine? That's why this debate goes on so feverishly.
What about his point, Congress refusing to take action? Let's look at Congress here for a moment. Do you imagine immigration reform is going to be problematic in getting through the House, or do you think we'll see a compromise on this issue when we haven't seen compromises on many other issues?
Yeah. Well, you know, right after the November elections, it looked like, Republicans have seen the light on the need to patch things up with the Hispanic community in particular, for whom the immigration issue was very important. Not so much because it's their number one issue, I want to point out. Jobs and the economy was their number one issue in polls and focus groups. But they remember how John McCain and others were rebuffed. John McCain and President George W. Bush were rebuffed before the 08 election by the right wing that was opposed to comprehensive immigration reform, calling it amnesty. It was not, certainly not in the sense of what Ronald Reagan passed back in the 80s, but there was a lot of ill feeling there. And it showed up at the polls when, if Mitt Romney had gotten the turnout that George W. Bush got in 04, he would have been elected. And I mean just the Hispanic turnout, he would have been elected. Instead, his Hispanic turnout was much lower than that of Bush, certainly lower than Obama, less than 30% of Hispanic voters. So the party, was all set to have some comprehensive immigration reform. And we saw it got through the Senate last week, finally. But the House, John Boehner is expressing reservations about it. And I think he's covering up for the fact that the Tea Party wing is so unpredictable. They don't even care about the good long-term good of the Republican Party. The party that got them into office, because their districts have been gerrymandered to be so safe that they can the more extreme they sound, the better to the folks back home. And that's the situation that Congress is in right now. You've got this unpredictable group in the House, the same group that stopped the farm bill, which we really ought to call the food stamp bill, because the biggest chunk of it goes to funding poor families and children. And child nutrition programs, that sort of thing. The farm part was thrown in to win the support of rural office holders, and that has worked for decades. The farm bill's been passed year after year until this year. This tells you just how sad Congress, especially the House, is right now, when even the Speaker of the House cannot deliver the votes of his own party.
Thanks, Nate, for your call. Casey in Green Bay, hi.
Well, hi. How are you today?
Okay, how are you?
Oh, just wonderful. I would like to make a disagreement with one of your past callers who compared the people in Guantanamo Bay, our enemy combatants, jihadists, terrorists, to what Nelson Mandela went through on Robben Island. I mean, that's a disgrace to everything Nelson Mandela went through. Those people in Guantanamo Bay are not the equivalent of what Nelson Mandela went through. And I'll just leave it at that. But I would also like to add, the Supreme Court, and I'm a Republican, and as long as we're on the annual bashing of all Republicans, I will agree that the Supreme Court has lost its way. They cannot make an independent thought process on either side of them. It's obviously 5-4, 5-4 as they vote. And I'm very disappointed because they have gone away from what the Supreme Court is supposed to do. Both sides have chosen political sides, and they can't make any independent thought decisions from either side of it. And it's disgraceful. And I wish we could clean up the Supreme Court, or we would have men and women that serve on it represent all people, not just one political side. And I'll take your response off the air.
Thanks, Casey.
Yeah, thank you. He raises some good points there. In regard to Guantanamo, he's right. There are a number of bad actors there in Guantanamo. We know they're bad actors, and we want to keep them incarcerated. It's just a question of where to put them. You've got others who we would release if only we could find a country that would take them. There's not enough evidence against them, and in some cases you've had people who were fingered by somebody else for reasons that had nothing to do with terror activities on that suspect's part, but they wound up in Guantanamo, and because of international diplomacy and other situations, we just haven't been able to release them to another country or move them to another location. So in that sense, I would say that it's somewhat comparable to Mandela and the ANC in terms of being held captive for political reasons.
Let's spend just a couple moments, Clarence, on whether or not Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden are too old to be president in 2016. What do you think?
The older I get, the more sympathetic and supportive I feel of my fellow seniors out there. You know, the voters decide this. You know, I mean, yeah, that's a good, healthy debate to have. It was a debate around John McCain and others. I can tell you that, my personal view, I see so much pent-up support for Hillary Clinton out there, people who wanted to vote for her last time, and then Barack Obama came along, and for a variety of reasons, they didn't get a chance to vote for Hillary, or they voted for Obama with a little bit of regret that they couldn't stick with Hillary Clinton. And it's not, now they're just itching to vote for Hillary Clinton. Not to mention a lot of guilty males out there who wanted to vote for a woman candidate.
Guilty males out there.
I'm not going to name any names, but no, there's a. But the fact is, there's to me the Hillary Clinton is certainly a clear front runner for the Democratic nomination, and it's up to her whether she wants to run or not. And I think she will run, and then the voters can decide. As far as Joe Biden goes, he certainly is, you know, he's shown himself in the debates to be a very sharp, intelligent gentleman. He's certainly a great campaigner. He's somebody that to know Joe Biden is to like Joe Biden, even if you make fun of him for his either malapropism or more often an awkward comment of some sort. But I loved his line during the VP debates when the moderator made some mention of Biden making some statements that arched people's eyebrows. And he said, yeah, but I always say what I mean. And, you know, this is something, or I'm sorry, he said, I always tell the truth. That was what it was that effect. And that was a great comeback because people tend to trust Joe Biden. And that is something that can make him still a candidate who has got, I think, a possibility for viability if he wants to run for president again, which he seems to have been doing off and on now since, about 1987?
Exactly. Like and what about the
Republicans? So we'll see.
What about the Republicans? Who's being groomed?
On the Republican side, yeah. Well, I'm waiting for Jeb Bush.
Are you?
To step up. Because for one thing, the Republican establishment has not been able to assert itself against the Tea Party insurgents. And as we saw in the last election, Republicans do respect seniority, meaning they tend to, after all the debates and the dust settles, they tend to nominate the person that's been out there the longest. That's Mitt Romney. That was John McCain. That was Bob Dole. They all got their turn, and George W. Bush in 2000 was a bit of a fluke, but not totally, because he was the son of a former president. So that's why I think Jeb Bush still has the best chance to get the nomination. And if he doesn't, I think it's kind of up for grabs between either, say, a Marco Rubio, who is a Tea Party favorite, but still somewhat untested. But he's kind of the Barack Obama in this field, I would say. Mm-hmm. That he has a good chance to come from behind. Chris Christie, who the establishment Republicans like, moderates love. Democrats, many of them would love to vote for Chris Christie if they had a chance because of all the good feeling that he left behind with his relations with Barack Obama. But he has to get through South Carolina, those other conservative primaries, in order to get to the nomination. You remember Rudy Giuliani tried just dodging all the early states and starting his campaign in Florida, where he had the best shot at winning, and it failed. He had no momentum going into Florida, and he had no momentum coming out. I think that those names, you've got other people like Ted Cruz, who's shown himself to be an educated firebrand, I think.
Too conservative, maybe.
Well, just too conservative sounding, and mm-hmm. I mean just too wacky sounding. I mean, too far out there on the fringe, which will delight a lot of the primary voters, like Newt Gingrich delighted them. But they didn't nominate Newt Gingrich. He won South Carolina, that was all. You've got folks like that. But I think, you know, who has the chance to win the Republican Party establishment? You really got to come back to the Jeb Bushes out there.
Mm-hmm. Clarence,
that's my view
you.
Again.
Thank you. We'd like
you.
To hear your view. Thank you, Clarence, for being with us. As always,
my pleasure.
Clarence Page, our guest for All Things Political for our new time slot. We will be having All Things Political each Monday at 1 o'clock now in the afternoon instead of 9 o'clock in the morning, and we hope that you will let people know if they don't know that we've moved. It's the same show, just at a different time. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley for producing the program, and thanks to you for your calls. Tomorrow at this time, we'll be talking about the latest resurgence of protests in Egypt, and they have become quite large, haven't they, against the Morsi government. So that's tomorrow during this time segment. News coming up, and we'll return to commemorate Gettysburg. Stay with us. This is The Ideas Network.